In fact, it's like a multi-billion dollar corporate entity.
Yeah. Chris, I'm going to get rid of your name tag here.
That's a good way of putting it.
All right, if you're going to have your attention, we'll start the meeting for the Commission on Ethics and the meeting of the committee to hear from Mr. Myers. Give us a roll call, please, just for the record.
J.J. Woodrock.
Here.
Manuel Farrar.
Here.
Robin Fiore.
Present.
Ronald Hudson.
Here.
Bruce Reinhardt.
Here. And I'd like to take up this matter of the minutes again. I think that what we'd like to do is send them out as we have them with the understanding that some amendments may follow when everybody's gotten a chance to read them. And we'll ask you to accept 10 days as an outside time to read them and notify us. If we don't hear from you in 10 days, we assume that you've read them and you had nothing earth-shaking that you wanted taken out or put in. All right.
Sounds good.
This time, then, we'll begin with our next speaker, Mr. Myers. And you've pretty much heard what's going on. We'll start with the same way.
Okay.
We've seen the movie.
I have no movie clips.
Okay.
And I didn't bring my annual report, but I can certainly send that to you. It is available online. Well, thank you for inviting me up. It's really a pleasure to be here. It's hard to believe that Chris and I have been doing what we've been doing for 12 years. We talk about it all the time, that we figured 2-3 years and that would be the extent of it. But somehow I guess we're survivors. A little bit about my background. It might be relevant, may not be. How I got the position is I'm from Miami and went to school in all these Florida schools. I have a bachelor's in political science, a master's in public administration, and a law degree, all from Florida institutions. And I've taught at two universities, law and ethics and government, practiced law for a couple of years. And my wife and I decided we wanted to move out of South Florida, so we moved up to Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I was teaching at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, and she was the executive director of an agency there. And we realized how much we missed South Florida. And there was an ad in the newspaper for the executive director of the Miami-Dade Commission on Ethics and Public Trust. And it kind of went through what they were looking for. I said, you know, I think I have, you know, those credentials, but my first thought is the position was probably rigged, that they had somebody in mind for it. And this comes from years of dealing with governments as a professor and doing some consulting work and also practicing law. So I applied, and I don't know how long your interviews are going to be, but my interview was 10 to 15 minutes maximum. Chris Mazzella was in the room. He interviewed for the same position. And make a long story short, what happened was after I was hired, the Ethics Commission said, now, maybe Mr. Mazzella would be interested in being the Inspector General for Miami-Dade County because he has the credentials for that. So why don't you ask him if he wants to apply for that position? So I asked him. He said, sure, I'll put in for that. So my first responsibility as the executive director was to deal with a grievance that an employee had filed against the Ethics Commission for not following the county protocol when it comes to selection. And the chairman of the Ethics Commission says, we don't follow the county rules. We're independent from the county. And that really did send a message. And we did follow, in my view, appropriate rules. He did apply for the position. He was considered for the position. He interviewed for that position as well. But to pick up on that autonomy independence thing, I mean, that's absolutely crucial. We have five ethics commissioners, and they're appointed, I guess, in some respects, similar to the way the appointments came here, through the chief judge makes two of the appointments, the Miami-Dade League of Cities makes one of the appointments, the FIU Labor Center makes an appointment, and there's a rotating appointment between the law schools at St. Thomas University and the University of Miami. And their charge was to hire an inspector, executive director and an inspector general. Chris talked about it. At one point we were linked. Our mission is a little different than the IG, obviously. We have jurisdiction over all county officials and employees, board members, people who do business with government in some respects, and all municipal officials, employees, and board members. And the Miami-Dade County has 35 municipalities, and including large cities like the City of Miami, City of Miami Beach. So we spend a lot of time dealing with the cities as well. We do four things. One is we give ethics opinions to people who fall under our jurisdiction. So if somebody wants a question, is it okay for me to accept a gift from someone who wants to do business with government, you know, can I accept that gift? My brother-in-law wants to enter into a contract with Miami-Dade County. I work in the Water and Sewer Department, and he wants to enter into a contract with the Public Works Department. Is that okay? So all these opinions, I require that the opinions, the request be made in writing for obvious reasons to protect the person who's making the request and to protect our office as well, and our responses will be in writing as well. We don't issue any verbal opinions to people. What we do is, because we've been doing this for 12 years now and we've issued probably 2,000 opinions in that range, not every question we pose to the Ethics Commission, and it's within my discretion really to decide which questions should go before the Ethics Commission and which can be handled by staff. And so we don't want to burden the Ethics Commission. I understand as volunteers there's a limited amount of time you have to meet. Every single question that's ever posed to us can't possibly go before the Ethics Commission. So if the opinion can be handled by staff, we have, I guess I should talk a little bit about the way our organization is structured. We have a legal unit as well, and the legal unit consists of, we have a general counsel, and then we have a staff attorney. And the way we've divided is the general counsel handles county matters and kind of general issues that come up with the Ethics Commission, and staff attorney handles the municipal matters. So if a question comes in from a municipality and I deem it's something that staff can handle, either myself or the staff attorney will prepare an opinion and we'll send it out to the requester. If it's something that's a county matter, it will be prepared by our general counsel or by me and it will be sent out to the requester. If it's something that has to go before the Ethics Commission, whoever it is, whether it's municipal or county, that question will be presented to the Ethics Commission, and the Ethics Commission will then decide, you know, whether to accept or reject or modify the opinion of staff, and then it goes out. The advice-giving function is a very important function that the Ethics Commission exercises. We don't use the county attorney's office. We have our own lawyers who are independent from the county, and that's critical. So if we get a question from a county commissioner, or we get a question from a city attorney, or we get a question from a department director, or a contractor, or someone connected to government sitting on a board, it doesn't get filtered through any other office. Now, we do tell people, particularly elected officials in the cities and even probably in the county, that you may want to run it by the county attorney, but they understand the jurisdiction to render these ethics opinions sits squarely with the Ethics Commission. And that independence that we can offer, that objective voice, is critical. So that's an important function. Another function is something that over time we've spent a lot of money on, and but it is in our enabling ordinance, which, you know, I should have mentioned that first. We are part of the county home rule charter. We were approved by the voters of Miami-Dade County. So unlike the inspector general, who technically the county commission could, with a stroke of the pen, remove the IG, only the voters could get rid of the Miami-Dade County Ethics Commission. Now, that doesn't mean the county commission, they could cut our funding to next to nothing, and we would be deemed irrelevant, not effective. But in terms of getting rid of the operations, it would have to be done by the voters. But once the voters did that, the county commission then enacted enabling legislation to provide us, you know, kind of the specific charges, if you will. We don't report to the county commissioner, the county mayor, or the county manager, anybody in government. I report to the Ethics Commission. The Ethics Commission's decisions are reviewable by a court of law. We've had appeals. We've been successful every single time except for one. Our budget is for the most part, approved by the county commission. There are some people who think that that's a problem, that we may be soft on them because if we're too tough on them, you know, they may cut our budget. Just like the IG said, fortunately, our budget has grown over the years. It's certainly not as large as the inspector general's. It's about $2.3 million. We have 17, 18 employees. But, you know, in terms of enhancing our powers, I mean, and or giving us more responsibilities, they certainly keep doing that year in and year out. One of the first things that I argued for, and this was 3 or 4 hours in front of the county commission, and it certainly is controversial in some respects, but I think it's absolutely critical, is the ability to self-initiate complaints, allowing our prosecutor, we call him an advocate, our advocate can take, you know, a tip or information, conduct an investigation, and then decide whether to file or not file a complaint. Because if you rely on the citizenry, the citizens, the residents, government employees, you know, to come forward, a lot of people are afraid to come forward and file formal complaints. They're willing to give you information, and then you conduct your own investigation. Some are willing to file, but it puts you in a very reactive posture if that's the way you have to operate. Unfortunately, the Florida Commission on Ethics does not have the authority to self-initiate complaints, and every year they try to get that power, and every year it's shot down. Now, they will accept a complaint that is that comes from a person who's connected, who's attached a newspaper article, so they don't have to have personal knowledge of the violation. But they, you can't call Tallahassee and say, "I want you to investigate County Commissioner so and so." They won't do it. You've got to file a formal complaint. So, in terms of enforcement, we have that authority, and obviously, it has to be used, you know, properly, judiciously, but it is part of our enforcement operations. We have two advocates, our advocate and then the assistant advocate, and they're the ones who try cases in front of the Ethics Commission. They are on our payroll, the Ethics Commission's payroll, but they are independent from the county and in some respects independent from the Ethics Commission in that the advocate may file a complaint and the advocate may recommend, I guess if he's filing the complaint, he certainly believes there's probable cause. That doesn't mean the Ethics Commission automatically finds probable cause. Likewise, if a complaint gets filed by the public, the advocate evaluates whether there's probable cause and makes that recommendation to the Ethics Commission. But this advocate works, you know, for, you know, he works for the executive director, really. He's under my authority, and he, like I say, is independent from the county, just like, you know, just like the rest of the employees of the Ethics Commission. So we have our own advocate. We have our own general counsel, and that's crucial. So we have subpoena power as well. Our subpoenas have to be approved through the Ethics Commission. So the advocate can't issue a subpoena on his own. He needs to ask the Ethics Commission for a subpoena, and they grant it. I mean, they don't want to interfere in his operations. If he feels a subpoena is necessary, they'll give him that. Once again, it could be abused in the hands of the wrong person. So enforcement is the stuff that gets a lot of attention. And there's something that Chris didn't talk about, and I would like to talk about it because it's something that I kind of learned on the job. The ability to deal with the media, it's absolutely crucial. You've got to have somebody who either has done it before or is smart enough or it learns, I guess, by being under fire that, you know, the media has a job to do, and we certainly respect that. But their view on things is not necessarily the same view that the Ethics Commission, you know, shares, and their view of what is a violation of the ethics laws is not necessarily what's consistent with the ethics code. For example, the media, in part, is willing to condemn somebody who's committed an appearance of impropriety. Our ethics code does not allow us to find, you know, that somebody who is engaged in an appearance of impropriety or a perception of wrongdoing is guilty of a violation of our ethics code. It has to be a full-fledged, real violation. If somebody has a voting conflict, it's got to be based upon the facts that whatever this person did is inconsistent with those standards that's in our ethics code, or if there's a violation of another section of the ethics code. So we only deal with real improprieties. We don't deal with appearances, but the media, at least some media, are quick to criticize, you know, a high-ranking official for making a determination that may very well be perfectly legal, even in the eyes of the Ethics Commission, but they'll still criticize the person for behaving in a manner, taking action, and oftentimes criticize us, too, for issuing those opinions, because I think it's somewhat of a misnomer. We are the Ethics Commission in Miami-Dade County, but we're not deciding whether or not people are acting ethically. We're deciding whether or not they're acting consistently with this code of conduct or these legal standards that have been adopted by the legislative body, which can be amended from time to time. And, you know, we've done that over the years to fill in, you know, some gaps and, tie up some loose ends to close loopholes and all that. But if it's not within that framework, we have to conclude that there's no violation. But like I say, dealing with the media, I think, is critical. And I don't know if that's a quality that you must have, you know, at the outset. But it certainly helps. And certainly being familiar with the way government operates. As I said, I mean, I practiced law and dealt, you know, with governments in that sphere as a lawyer, and I also dealt with government as a government or public administration professor. So I had a pretty good understanding of the way local government operates. I completely agree with Chris that every department has a unique culture and climate, but to bring somebody in who really has no experience dealing with government agencies, I think is a mistake. There's so many other things you need to learn on the job. You have to know how government operates, and so I think that's important. So we have enforcement authority, we have training and outreach authority, we conduct training for all county employees, we've been mandated with the responsibility of conducting training for people who sit on county boards, we do training in the municipalities, we do workshops and seminars and conferences. Several years back, we did a conference with Dr. Fiore and her people at FAU. We're currently working on a conference with the FAU Procurement Center on ethics and accountability in public procurement. And that's an important part of what we do. We do ethics debates for candidates running for office, where the only questions that are asked are about, you know, what will you do if you are elected to make government more open, accountable, transparent. So we're not asking questions, the typical questions that people get asked. We do forums for people running for office, candidate forums, the things you need to know if you're going to run for office. So we do training and outreach and education. We do the enforcement stuff and the advice giving. And lastly, we can recommend legislative changes either at the county level or the municipal level. Once again, those advances that will bring better government, more open government, more transparent government to the public. We have, as I said, 17 employees, a budget about $2.3 million. The Ethics Commission meets about once a month, 3 hours. If I can, just tell a quick story about it. We had a meeting yesterday. And the other thing that's important is what we do, and I think Chris kind of touched on this too, what we operate in a very political environment, but we can't be political. But things get politicized, so how do we depoliticize them? And a perfect example is something that happened yesterday. There, in one of the small municipalities in Miami-Dade County, there is a feud between the faction that is now in power versus the faction that was in power that was voted out of office. And these people keep throwing ethics complaints at one another. So the Ethics Commission gets inundated. Now, these are complaints that are being filed directly with the Ethics Commission. So our advocate, he's not passing judgment on them other than to look at whether or not there's probable cause. But so he's not the one filing them. He's just kind of reacting to them being filed, and we can't stop people from filing complaints. Well, because it's a public meeting, I mean, and I'm sure the judge can appreciate this, even though they're operating in a quasi-judicial capacity when they're hearing these complaints, since it is a sunshine meeting, it is a public meeting, we allow the public to comment before we go into the complaints. Well, this meeting yesterday, all these people got up and talked about how unfair it was that so-and-so, you know, had been the target and so-and-so had so many ethics complaints filed against them, and what a good person this person was and how they cared about the community, to the point where somebody even started reading, you know, into the record, you know, a letter that was from their former city attorney. And this was not during the hearing. The hearing itself was supposed to be confidential because up until there's a determination of probable cause, these things are supposed to be in executive session. And one of the ethics commissioners had mentioned at a prior meeting about political motivations, what's motivating people to file complaints. And, you know, without criticizing the ethics commission, it shouldn't matter what motivates people to file the complaint. I mean, it has to be looked at as whether or not there's evidence to support, you know, a complaint or not. And if there's no evidence, the complaint should be dismissed. If there is evidence, probable cause probably should be found, and it should move to the next stage. But kind of getting caught up in that political environment is something that the executive director and certainly the ethics commission has to, take great pains to avoid. And I think the idea of appointing people to an ethics commission like your group or like Miami-Dade County, people who are not connected to county or municipal government, is critical. And by the same token, I think you have to have an executive director who also, I don't think it's a good idea to have an executive director who's worked for the county government, you want them to know about the way local government operates, but I think if they're an insider, I think that it already, at least initially, raises some suspicions about whether or not this person is going to be biased. That's, I guess, my opinion on that. So we've come a long way in 12 years, obviously, and we every day is a battle. We have people who, as would be expected, pay a lot of attention to what we do, and I think that's an important thing. You have people think that we're too hard, people who think we're not hard enough. If I could just talk about one other thing, and then just open it up, sure. If that's all right. The penalties. This is something that is a common criticism of the Ethics Commission. Let me offer my perspective on that. Essentially, we can fine people, we can reprimand people, we can issue these letters of instruction, we can impose restitution where it's appropriate. We don't remove people from office. We don't we don't fire employees, wayward employees. So people say, oh, this guy gets fined $500 and wound up making a $20,000 profit. This person had outside employment, and the person, made all this, money with his outside employment, but it was really conflicting employment, and he winds up with a small fine, and he doesn't even lose his job. So how do you defend that? I would say two things to that. One is that you would hope that the embarrassment of going through this very public process where this ethics commission has adjudicated you to be an unethical person, your reputation would be impacted by that, where that would deter enough people from engaging in that kind of behavior. The other thing is I would agree that we probably need to strengthen our penalties. One of the things we're asking for is the ability to disgorge profits. So if somebody makes a profit from an unethical act, that profit could be taken from them. And that might deter people. We have a couple cases right now where there are real estate agents who will receive commissions that they really should not be entitled to, because what they did was clearly a violation of the county ethics code. And if we could take those commissions from them, that might send a loud message. But I don't know if people understand that, it's not, we don't have ethics jails. We're not throwing people in ethics jails. But we do work very closely with the state attorney. We work with the IG, with the U.S. attorney. A number of cases that have come to our attention have wound up being prosecuted criminally, obviously not by us, but you start digging into something and you find that there's more than just an ethics violation. A case of a former city commissioner in the city of Miami recently, it turned out it was our case. He was he wound up getting a job for his daughter, a no-show job for his daughter with a city contractor. That's clearly wrong. But it started out simply as just an inquiry into his financial disclosure forms, and then it led into something more than that. So, we try to, let law enforcement do what it needs to do. We have audit responsibilities, but we don't do a lot of audits. The IG has a very large and capable audit staff. The county has its own audit staff, but we can conduct audits. of matters if we feel it's appropriate. So we try to be as versatile as possible and use our resources as best we can, given that they are limited. But I guess they're better than most ethics agencies around the country. So with that, I guess I'm open for questions.
All right, sir. We'll begin with Mr. Arverson.
Thank you very much for being here.
Sure.
What do you think the qualities are that we're looking for this position? I mean, you described yourself, but particularly in light of where we are in this process, you were the first person
right.
on your job.
Right.
You were a staff of one, I assume, when you started. With those parameters, what do you think we should be looking for?
Well, that's a good question. The way it actually, our initial budget was for an inspector general, an ethics director, a paralegal, and a secretary. That was it. So we had to be lawyer, investigator. We really didn't have any prosecutions early on. We actually had to hire somebody to be a special prosecutor to try cases before the Ethics Commission. So, you know, I had to wear a lot of hats. Could you do it with a non-lawyer? Sure, I guess you could. But I mean, if you're gonna give somebody the responsibility of evaluating these requests for opinions and analyzing whether or not something's a conflict, could that be done by a paralegal and then it's presented to an administrator to review who's not a lawyer? You could probably, you know, do that as long as eventually it went to the Ethics Commission. That would be fine. But what we realized early on is there were so many requests for opinions that the Ethics Commission would do nothing but hear these requests. And in 3 or 4 hours, there's only so much time they can devote to that. So I think, first and foremost, a strong administrator. You've got to have somebody who has an administrative background. And, you know, to pick up on some of the stuff that Chris said, you know, being able to build relationships with people in government and outside government, you know, working with others. I mean, not assuming, you know, to get on your high horse and, you know, we're the Ethics Commission, we can do no wrong. Because people view you with suspicion to begin with, let's face it. Most people don't like it when the Ethics Commission, the Inspector General's investigators are knocking at the door. But so having somebody who's comfortable, you know, dealing with others, having somebody who has a strong administrative background, I think a legal background is helpful. I thought that my background as an ethics professor certainly helped. So, you know, not only, you know, dealing with real-life ethics questions, but dealing with the more philosophical side of ethics, I felt it was of some value. The ability to understand and read statutes and ordinances and court cases is important. The way we set up our Ethics Commission, the executive director is not involved in the investigations. He's not involved in the enforcement of cases. So I think you leave those prosecutorial or investigative duties to others. Although, once again, I think you need to understand how investigations get started, whether or not the weight of the evidence supports things. But ultimately, I think that should be a delegated function to others. And then if you're going to have a training and outreach component, somebody who's comfortable, you know, making, public appearances, somebody who's done some training before, ethics training, other types of training, maybe somebody who has a background in teaching, so they can relate to audiences. And you're going to get a lot of people who are very critical of what you do, who want to show you up. And so someone who can think quickly on his or her feet, somebody who is, you got to be thick-skinned, let's face it. You cannot be thin-skinned and be an executive director or an IG in any community.